We all have days when we feel disconnected, like we can't link up with our friends or family or someone who knows us and talk things through. If we're lucky, those days are balanced with times when we can easily access some support and we feel we belong. But the ABC's National Australia Talks survey discovered one in six of us feel lonely, and young people are struggling the most. That's right, not older people whose families have left home. Over half of 18 to 24-year-olds said loneliness is an ongoing problem for them, and anxiety is more common in that age bracket than most others too. So why are our young people feeling so alone in a time that's really driven by the ability to connect? Professor Brett McDermott is an adolescent psychiatrist and consultant to Beyond Blue, and he believes there are many ways to break the cycle of loneliness. Brett, thanks for joining us on Life Matters.
It's a pleasure.
Now, firstly, loneliness, of course, doesn't necessarily mean just being alone. Can you break down the different types of loneliness that young people might be experiencing?
Well, loneliness is really a subjective negative feeling state. So it's something you experience, and it's very close to, you know, other negative states like feeling depressed, feeling anxious. It's related to a whole bunch of other constructs like, you know, social isolation, and, you know, having a sort of a fairly sparse social network. One of the problems with loneliness is it's not specific to any one condition. Loneliness can happen across a range of mental health conditions, like people with social anxiety and agoraphobia. But this is actually really important. Loneliness can happen in people that don't have mental illnesses at all. So, for instance, I know a lot of single parents who are in very busy, noisy households, but don't have any adults to speak to, and they can actually feel very lonely as well. So loneliness is a normal part of life. It's a subjective experience, which is negative, but we also do see it in some mental illnesses.
And Brett, are there some people who are more prone to loneliness, whether it's through personality or life experience?
Well, clinically, I kind of break it down into two types of people. I break it down into people who are subjectively lonely, but they seem to have lots and lots of friends, and they might even be a friend of yours, and they've told you they're lonely. And then there's people who the reality is they actually don't have very many friends at all. Now, the second group, the ones that are feeling lonely without friends, they actually might have issues about, you know, understanding emotions. They might have issues about making and sustaining relationships. They might, for instance, have a developmental issue. They might be on the autism spectrum. And their issues are challenges in making friendships. But the other group, the one that you think, well, I'm your friend and you're telling me you're lonely, those kind of folks, somewhere in their life, they often haven't developed that voice in their head that says, you know, you're loved, the people, you know, people respectful, you know, people care for you. They don't have that soothing voice in their head that when things go bad kind of calms and contains the rest of us.
So why do you think that young people are suffering more negative thoughts and feelings of loneliness than any other age bracket today?
Well, I think there's two things we should consider. One is we should consider that young people have got a stronger voice in society than they've ever had. Then they might actually, you know, feel surprised when I say things like that. But, you know, through social media and, you know, through modern technology, we're hearing the views of young people, and there's almost somewhat of an epidemic of recognition. I think, for instance, depression has always been there, but recently people have been much more empowered to talk about it. People are much more empowered to talk about loneliness. So firstly, it actually might be a measurement issue. But if it's a real issue, and that's equally possible, then you'd have to wonder about the quality of friendships that are being made. And I even question the word friend. I think that in the Facebook age of I have 400 friends, well, is that the same as the use of word of friend, you know, when I was a child? When I was a child, a friend, you actually knew what they looked like and knew what they spoke like, and you know, you met them, you bumped into them every day. And I think that, you know, things are very disrupted and very different. And The current generation has a whole bunch of challenges that that I never had.
We're speaking to Professor Brett McDermott, an adolescent psychiatrist and consultant to Beyond Blue. And I'd love to hear from you too. If you've had periods in your life at any age when you felt lonely, what was that like and what helped turn things around? Jump onto our Facebook page and leave a comment there. Also joining us today on Life Matters is Lexi Gregory. She's the founder of All Ego Production Company. She directs short films looking into loneliness and young women's mental health in the Northern Territory. Lexi, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you're 22, so you're smack bang in the middle of this age bracket of 18 to 24 where people say that they are experiencing high levels of loneliness. In your opinion, why would that be?
It's, well, I'm not a mental health professional or anything like that, but yeah, as you say, I am kind of smack bang in the middle of that age bracket. And I think it's because we're going through this intense period of change, and we go from, you know, seeing friends, those friends that you see every day and you know their names and you know what they look like in school and when you're a bit younger, to usually moving away from home, you know, living in a different city, and a lot of change in our lives. And we, I think, feel a lot disconnected from our original support network, and it's really hard to rebuild those connections with different people in a new city.
And that's particularly true if you live in a rural, regional or remote area, that you almost have to move for a period of time to get those work and study opportunities. But Lexi, what about the bugbear of social media? Does that help people stay connected with their real friends?
I always love it when social media is brought up, because it's like the evil that we can blame all our problems on in the world. But it is, it's this funny thing where social media is this creature that has, we've never had anything like it before in human history, this intense connection with people all over the world. And it's, in one way, it is extremely connecting, as Brett said, young people are being heard and we can interact on matters that we care about, but it is isolating as well, because we're not actually getting that real connection. We're not holding someone's hand, we're not seeing someone face to face. So I think it can definitely be exasperating those feelings of loneliness.
And I believe your mum's got thoughts on social media.
Oh, well, she does work in the media, so she's got thoughts, but she calls it, you know, when you've got so much information coming in, it's kind of like a system overload. I think we can become desensitized when we're getting so much information constantly. It's almost like it's difficult to pick out important information, that salient information, and work out what actually matters and what we should be talking to people about. If, you know, people are putting on social media, you know, I feel lonely or I'm depressed, I wonder how many people that are their friends on Facebook or, you know, Instagram, whatever you're using, actually reach out to them and say, hey, are you okay?
Exactly. Well, those years from 18 to 25, as you say, are all about finding out what matters and who you are and finding your path. Let's hear from Mitchell Van Homrie. He's 25. Here's some of his story.
The first time I probably noticed that I was pretty lonely would have been when I'd moved away from Brisbane, where I'd grown up and gone to school and had really good friends, really good support networks. I only moved about an hour away. I moved down to the Gold Coast, and it was striking at times, because you'd go from this situation where I lived so close to my friends, I'd see them, you know, four or five times a week. It was easy. We could pop around someone's house, we could hang out or whatever. And then I was in this position where I couldn't do that. I couldn't just pop up the road and see my mates. You're just isolated, and it's not far. And I think that might have been part of the issue, that it wasn't far enough, that I had to completely make new friends and get into this situation where I was completely starting anew. I still was clinging on to what I thought I had. And that was pretty confronting to me.
Lexi Gregory, you make films about young women's mental health in the top end, but from a personal perspective, you've moved around the country for university and work. Have you felt lonely?
Definitely, and that really does ring true, that feeling of moving away and then having that unusual feeling of not being able to go down the road to see your friends. I grew up in Darwin and then moved to Melbourne for university. And though I still had a support network, I mean, everybody in Darwin moves to Melbourne or Sydney when they get bored of Darwin. So there were definitely still people that I was friends with, but it wasn't that closeness and that ease of connection. And so definitely I did feel lonely when I was studying at university, but there's also kind of that loneliness that comes with the pressure to succeed at university and potentially, I know for myself, prioritising study over spending time with friends and things like that.
And Brett, I wanted to ask you, Professor Brett McDermott, adolescent psychiatrist and consultant to Beyond Blue, is this new? Haven't young people been moving for work or opportunities for generations? I'm wondering why this loneliness is having such an impact now.
Well, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, some of the favourite things I used to read were, you know, various poets, you know, that are 1,000 years old and they're whinging about, you know, about, you know, things like, you know, being depressed and being lonely. These things have been happening forever. I think that, you know, I very much agree with lots of what Lexi have said. I think that, you know, in our modern economy, people do move away incredibly often. It's almost, you know, if you have a family of three or four children, it's really not unusual to have, you know, 75% of them in another state or indeed another country. So part of our economic reality at the moment is that people are living away from their primary connections. And you can have, you know, you can look at a photo of year 12 group and find out that most of those people actually aren't within 100 miles of each other. So I think there are some major, major disruptions. I'm really very optimistic, you know, listening to young people. They're the ones that are going to solve this. It's not going to me, you know. It's not going to be me that solves this. And we need to, I think, find the best solutions from technology. And you know, my family's got a technology group that one of my family members is on every day, and I think we feel incredibly connected by doing that. You know, it's obviously just a closed kind of family group. So technology can be magnificent at keeping us connected. And of course, technology now can involve, you know, video chatting as well as just audio. Again, I think that I also liked Lexi's comment about disruption. I mean, never has there been a time on the planet where some of our fundamental biology, like the need to be socially connected, has been challenged like now. The last... you know, I shock people to say that I remember punch cards. I remember pre-laptops. In fact, I actually remember pre-desktops. This is really embarrassing to admit nationally. But the disruption in the last 30 years has just been profound. And I think, you know, socially, we are struggling with this. And by the way, it's just not interpersonally. I mean, you know, school as a system. We have a system called, you know, education and schooling. Well, the bad news is that actually mightn't be fit for purpose at the moment.
And that's a wider discussion that I think we'll have to have on another day. But Lexi, if I could touch in with you. Yes, exactly. I believe, Lexi, that you feel we might be looking at the past through rose-coloured glasses a little bit. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, definitely. And like Brett said, these aren't new issues. Poets have been complaining about these things for hundreds of years. I think it's really easy to look back on the past and go, oh, it's so much easier then, or for older generations to potentially look on younger generations and go, you have it much easier, or young people, they like to complain, things like that. So it's always like a grass is greener kind of situation, because we don't know what older generations have experienced, and we can't comment on their subjective feelings of loneliness. But also, I don't think older generations can really comment on if what we're feeling is potentially worse or less than what they had in their day. So it's this really weird phenomenon where nobody really knows what anybody else is feeling, but I guess you have to look at the data and see that this is a problem, and it doesn't really matter if it was a problem before because it's a problem now, and what's happened in the past has already happened, and maybe we should work towards fixing it in the future.
And together, by the sounds of it too. Let's hear from Mitchell Homrie again. He says even talking about being lonely can attract criticism.
Yes, I am still feeling lonely, and I would say I'm feeling anxious 99% of the time. And I actually am trying to get my head around that it's okay to be by myself. It's hard because I can do all right for a day or two or whatever. I don't want people to think bad of me. I don't want people, and it sounds dumb saying it, like, I don't want people to think you're a loser, you don't have mates in your new city. Like, it sounds so stupid. And it's like a sign of weakness or whatever. And it's this yuck feeling that you have. And I would be too scared to speak about it. Guys, just don't do it. It's just not in their shtick.
So, Lexi, stupid, a loser. Are these things that people associate with loneliness from the experience that you have working with young people in the mental health field?
Sounds like the classic stigma of mental health is cropping up there. It's funny. Definitely those feelings do come across, and those kind of words, the negative connotations that we attach to talking about mental health and talking about loneliness or depression, anxiety, those kind of issues, they definitely do crop up. But I also think that that's changing, and potentially that's a reflection of who I surround myself with, people who are maybe more open to talking about mental health and health concerns. But I think if you look at the state of discussion in Australia and worldwide, we're talking about these issues more and more. You know, if we look back 20, 50 years about what public discussion was about, it wasn't, you know, talking about depression on the radio. Things have, I think, really changed, but definitely there is still that stigma attached to mental health and definitely reaching out for help.
Indeed, and clearly having a good support group is really important, and being prepared to talk about any feelings of loneliness. Mitchell Homrie told us he does have one person he can turn to regularly.
I really haven't done anything to pull myself out of this situation, if I'm perfectly honest. I'm trying to be a little bit more okay with being by myself. I have made sacrifices, which are namely are leaving a support network to do something that I wanted to achieve, and I think that's pretty cool that I'm doing that. And like, if I need help, I'll probably just go to my mum. Like, mums are sick and mine's a legend and she helps me out a lot. At the end of the day, I think it'll just be one of those things where either I'm comfortable with the situation I'm in and that's awesome, or I grow a new support network, and I think that'll also be awesome too.
Mums are sick, I will corroborate that. But Brett McDermott, what else can young people do if they feel that they need help?
Sure, and I'll jump on and say yes, mums are sick.
But, yep.
Okay, well, I'll just say a researchy thing because professors are meant to say researchy things. So, you know, some of the research is really clear that if you talk to a mental health professional, your levels of stigma afterwards go down quite markedly. So actually, the minute you kind of break that threshold and go and talk to someone, people actually, you know, their mental health related stigma improves. So that means it's actually good kind of talking to someone. Now, of course, you don't have to talk to a mental health person. I mean, you should pick a person, I would suggest, that has kind of less problems than you do, and someone who is a skilled listener rather than a skilled talker. You want someone to actually listen to your problems. You don't want someone to solve your problems for you. You want someone to reflect back to you, you know, your solutions and which ones are, you know, slightly more crazy or less crazy and which ones are likely to work. That's the kind of person you want, a really good listener who will brainstorm with you. But we do know, again, from research that kind of problem-orientated solutions for loneliness work better than emotional-orientated solutions. Now, what I mean by that is, if you conceptualize loneliness as a problem, I'm going to go forth and solve this by... An older person might join a men's shed, you know, a male might join a men's shed, someone might join a creative group, an art group or a music group or urban sketches or whatever. If you take this on as a problem that you can play with some solutions, then that seems to work much better than taking it on as an emotion, which I'm going to challenge and replace with, you know, happy thoughts. That generally kind of doesn't work at all.
That's really encouraging. And I quickly want to check in with you, Lexi. Have you got any top tips for what helps beat the loneliness if you're in that situation?
I'd just like to quickly say that, yes, mums are sick. I definitely agree with that. Top tips for beating loneliness. Phrasing it as, yes, loneliness is a problem that we can overcome is a really nice way of looking at it. And I think something that I would say is just reach out to people, because people are feeling the same way as you. You know, as much as we like to think that we're these unique flowers, you know, we're not really that different from one another. And I think that if we reach out to people in our, you know, social environment and just sit down and go, hey, let's have a chat. I'm feeling this. Not everything's bad in my life. Here are some good things. What are some good things happening in your life? You know, I noticed you've got XYZ problems. How can I sit down and listen to them? I find cuddling a dog is always really helpful for you're not feeling
That's
great.
That's up there on number one. And reaching out, as you say, is a fantastic move. Thank you both so much for exploring this issue with us a little bit on Life Matters today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Lexi Gregory is the founder of All Ego Productions. She makes short films providing insight into female mental health. And Professor Brett McDermott is an adolescent psychiatrist and a consultant to Beyond Blue. And thank you also to Mitchell Van Homrie for sharing his story.